like Tim Hortons TCNT. Tell us where you work. Tell us why you want us to bring you Tim Hortons, Timbits, and we will perhaps pick you as a winner and come to your office on Thursday.
Yep. Tomorrow we will compile all the tweets that have used that hashtag, randomly pick a winner, and we will deliver some Tim Hortons coffee and some Timbits and some donuts and stuff to your office. Rhiannon won last week. She loved it. It was great. She can tell you how amazing we were.
Yeah, check out the photos up on Twitter. Again, use that hashtag at Tim Hortons TCNT. Justice and Drew, Sam is back here on Twin Cities News Talk. And hey, look, it's a voice of the Vikings in the studio.
Hi, Alan. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's up, dude? How you doing?
Good, thank you.
So, Browns are 0-7. Mm-hmm. So, does Bradford get to play coming up?
Are you insinuating we don't need a quarterback against the Cleveland Browns?
No.
Since
I was just
so bad.
I was just being silly and showing you that I actually had like data about the upcoming game.
Right. Yeah, it ought to be a doozy. A worldly affair from London.
Very,
at a rugby stadium called Twickenham.
What I would call a very competent and professional win yesterday from the Vikings.
Okay.
It's a team that they were supposed to beat, mm-hmm. and they went out there, and I thought they played. You know, the offense, I think, could have been a little better, could have had a little more touchdowns, a few less field goals, but still, all systems seemed to be functioning pretty well against the Ravens yesterday.
It was the trickiest game to handicap for me of all seven this season. You know, when we meet on Mondays and recap games, last week it was Border Battle 114. We chat a little bit about the adversary, where on a Monday at 7:55, you know, I'm not super far down the road on the adversary, but as we as the week progresses and I learn more about the upcoming opponent, Baltimore defensively is a very, very tricky team with a bunch of big physical players up front. It absolutely is the toughest front seven the Vikings have seen this year. They found a way to run for 169 yards. I thought the quarterback missed some open guys, you know, which is correctable, but needs to be corrected moving forward. And defensively speaking, I mean, seriously, you can argue this is the best overall defense in the National Football League, and it looked the part yesterday.
Well, yeah, and I'm usually, I'm not usually one to enjoy defensive heavy games, but kind of to what Drew was saying, that was a fun and interesting game to watch, to take in. I really enjoyed watching what the Vikings were doing, and I mean, on both sides, it was a fun game.
It was a meat grinder. Your kicker needed to be big. He was 6 of 6, and you know, I don't want to go too hardcore on your audience, but the Ravens have a player named Brandon Williams, and he is the most underrated defensive player in the NFL. When he misses, they lose, and they give up major, major chunks of yards. He's a defensive lineman. He returned yesterday, had a tackle for loss right out of the gate, had a deflected pass right out of the gate, and, you know, credit the Vikings, because with this guy in the game, it took them a little while to figure out how to get around him and how to neutralize him. Eventually, they did. And, you know, on the 29-yard touchdown run by Latavius Murray, he was able to get around this creature named Brandon Williams, and that was a very proud moment.
Did it feel good seeing Latavius finally sort of get off the schneid there and break that run out? I mean, he's a guy that's kind of struggled in the offense all season, and we need production out of Murray if we're going to have some success on offense.
I think the offensive coordinator, the way he is mixing it up weekly with receivers and running backs, is very creative. You know, you put Jerick McKinnon on 3 touchdowns over 2 games, and you screen a lot with him, and you have designed cutbacks to get him to the outside, and then the adversary plots for that, and then you go power running with Latavius Murray. So it's in the NFL, keeping teams off balance has to take place every single week. It's a very challenging endeavor for these coaches. And for Latavius, he had off-season surgery, missed training camp, missed most of the preseason, looked very slow to go early in the season, 1.9 yards per carry in the win over Green Bay, but 6.5 yards per carry yesterday, so that's heading in the right direction.
I said it last week, and I'm going to say it again, because I don't think on a national scale that the Vikings are getting the credit they deserve. Every team in the NFL gets decimated by injuries at some point, deals with injuries, and especially key players. players. We've seen quarterbacks go down for multiple teams. Mm-hmm. Yet these Vikings still reeling off the losing Teddy Bridgewater,
yeah.
right? Still sort of dealing with that situation, mm-hmm. losing Dalvin Cook, losing Sam Bradford, all the injuries that the key injuries to key players. And they're 5-2 and sitting on top of the NFC North.
Two consecutive games without the wide receiver Stephon Diggs. Right. They lost their left tackle Riley Reiff during the game yesterday. They lost their left guard Jeremiah Searles, who already was replacing the starter Nick Easton. So the rookie Kane, Danny Isadora, got a chance to play a bunch of snaps yesterday, and they still ran for big chunks of yardage. I guess I don't really look like when I'm studying the NFL, I don't really look for pomp and circumstance or praise nationally from those analyzing Vikings football. You know, following it every single day, I know this defense is probably the best overall defense in the NFL. The quarterback threw a pick yesterday, but it was a pass that was batted in the air. And Case Keenum is not really an explosive quarterback, but he's very careful with the ball, and that's very key. So, you know, I'm not saying the 2017 Minnesota Vikings are the 2000 Ravens, a Super Bowl-winning production, but that team had a really, really good defense, a quarterback that was conservative and very careful with the ball. They could run the ball, and that's how they won the whole thing. So hopefully we're on to something here.
Assuming things go the way that we think that they're going to go with the Browns in London, what game are you looking at? What's circled on the calendar moving forward on the schedule?
The second half of the season is chock full of good quarterbacks. We play Cleveland in London on Sunday. Then we get a week off. Then we come out of it. We go to Washington. We take on Kirk Cousins. They beat the Vikings there last year. Very good quarterback. After that, you get one of the hotter teams in the NFL, the LA Rams here, with their second-year quarterback, Jared Goff. He's having a fantastic season. Then you have a string of three consecutive on the road where you hook Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons, Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers, and on Thanksgiving, Matt Stafford and the Detroit Lions. So the schedule is of the meat grinder variety following the bye. That's why winning this weekend is imperative.
I assume we stick with Case, do we assume we stick with Case, and do you see him just getting better as we, you know, get further into the season?
Can't see any circumstances where this team replaces Case Keenum, no matter the situation. I mean, if you... let's say we come out of the bye week, so now you have Cleveland, then an off week, then a week after that, and Bradford's like, hey, my knee feels great. That's going to be a very tricky situation because you're winning games with Case Keenum. However, Sam Bradford, with all due respect to Case, is a better quarterback specifically for this offense than Case Keenum. Teddy Bridgewater started practicing last week. I watch every practice. I didn't think Teddy looked great. I thought he got better as the week went on, but I mean, how am I going to be mad at that? He ripped up his knee 14 months ago.
Right.
Teddy's going to get better practice by practice by practice. So it's not a bad situation to be in, to have Keenum and Bradford and Bridgewater. I think the most difficult situation will be choosing between the three.
How disruptive is this this London trip? This is not the first time that the Vikings have done it, that you've been a part of it. Is it something that the players get excited about, or is it sort of a hurdle that has to be overcome to keep focused and keep moving forward on the season?
Mixed bag. There are some loathing the opportunity to leave Wednesday evening, fly for 9 hours, 15 minutes, get to London, do the customs clomp, which is about an hour, given we travel with 100 and change, and then get to the hotel, practice. I do my radio show for KFAN 3 to 6 London time, 9 to noon here, Thursday and Friday. So it's this one is more of a business trip than when we went in 2013. When we went in 2013, we lost a heartbreaker to the Cleveland Browns on a Sunday, and then the next evening, Monday evening, we left. And so we were in England for quite some time, and it was a very, very relaxing, cool trip. I enjoyed every minute of it. This one is more of a hurry-up situation with practices than the game at 1:30 London time on Sunday, 8:30 Central, 8:30 a.m. Central on Sunday. Then we leave after the game. So we will be back at like 2:30 in the morning, Monday morning.
Yeah.
You know, then we have the customs thing here. That's going to take an hour.
Right.
You know, then you get home at 5 in the morning and join Justice and Drew at
7:55 next Monday. I'm not expecting to see you next Monday.
I'll be here.
All right.
That's what I do. Did you, when you went last time, did you get any gauge on how it was received by the locals there, the attendance?
That was unbelievable.
Yeah?
Yeah, the game at Wembley in 2013 against the Steelers.
It's Wembley, too.
It had a buzz on the field before the game, and when the teams ran out of the tunnels, I've never experienced. Well, yeah, I have. NFC title game 2009, playoff game here 2009. It had that kind of buzz, that kind of feel to it. They subsequently have played a lot of games in London. Now, we played a rugby stadium this time called Twickenham, mm-hmm. And it seats 80,000. I assume they sell it out, but I'm not sure. Vikings fans travel en masse, and there will be thousands of Vikings fans that travel from North America to Great Britain, and there already are a lot of Vikings fans over there. So the Vikings definitely are an international item, and I expect a frenzied crowd Sunday.
See, that's the cool. I mean, you think about being a fan and traveling. Like, it's difficult for you guys, and we know the logistical part of it when the shows have to go and you've got to sort of uproot everything that you do. But if you're a fan,
yeah.
and you get the opportunity to take advantage of the right. trip and go, that's
unbelievable.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, if you feel good about your hotel accommodations, your flight, and your seats. You know, I don't even know how you would get seats for this game. So you pay for them online and you get your tickets and you have them in your hands. And you know you have good seats for a game at a rugby stadium to watch your favorite team. And you can hang out with family and friends and not have to work and just kind of negotiate Great Britain at your pace. That's spectacular.
Yeah.
That's absolutely spectacular.
Now, given this was a normal week, Cleveland Browns shouldn't be much for Vikings fans to worry about. They're a team in disarray. Does the added disruption of traveling to London, all the festivities and everything around that, make this game a bit more of a wild card in your mind? Or should the Vikings have no trouble taking
Cleveland's run defense is really good. It's really good. And, they lost a spine tingler yesterday in overtime to Tennessee. I think Cleveland's won one of its last 24 games. So this is beyond embarrassing. And I would be shocked if the Vikings did not find a way to win the game. Tricky spot because you're not only playing in a different country, but you have the bye week after this game. So you just have to make sure minds are not drifting to what their plans are, and they look at it like, all right, we're in first place in the NFC North. We're finding ways to win every game. Our defense is unbelievable. The Browns suck, and we're off next week.
Right.
You just got to make sure that there's not anybody who falls into that mindset, even for a second. You should bury this team, be 6-2 into the off week, chill out, get healthy, come back, sprint to the finish line, get a home playoff game.
Hey, control your own destiny at this point,
right.
with the lead that you have halfway through the season.
Now, this is not a personal question for you, Paul Allen, but I'm curious. What is your biggest concern right now with the team? If you had one, what's your biggest concern with the team?
I would say the health of key players defensively, because the offensively, they're down to Case Keenum. They lost Rookie of the Year candidate Dalvin Cook. The offensive line took a hit yesterday. They're missing Diggs, but they're still finding ways to win. Defensively, outside of Andrews and Deho missing the Packers game, they have been completely healthy through the first half of the season. And this defense is becoming historically good. So keeping all of the right components on the field defensively, that's the biggest key the rest of the way.
Well, Paul Allen, voice of the Vikings, hey, man, thanks for the time.
You got it.
Safe travels.
Bye, Sam.
See you next
Bye.
Week.
Unless you want to stay and talk about the protest that was taking place outside the
Love
stadium.
It.
Out of the Star Tribune, and we'll get to this here in just a few minutes, out of the Star Tribune. Rally against police violence in Vikings games draws boos, raised fingers from fans. Organizers said the idea was to raise awareness about police-involved shootings.
Yeah, we've also got your keyword for this hour that you're going to text to 200-200 to be entered into a chance to win $1,000. We want to put a grand in your hand coming up in just a moment.
As opposed to the side of flab that Paul Allen just put in his hand
That's
when
right.
he walked over here and pinched my side.
You got a little handful.
If it was anybody else, I'd be really, really upset, but it kind of makes me feel special.
He got a handful of justice as he went out. Also, Representative Jason Lewis joining us in about 20 minutes.
Your shot.
Yeah, download it now.
Do it.
Do it. Because you're going to get the All Access. So you're going to get the All Access preview this weekend. If you download it now,
yeah, you are.
You'll be all set, ready to go.
You're going
to
get all that.
All the free stuff this weekend. It's going to be really cool.
iHeartRadio has a Halloween tree coming your way. Again, this weekend, free preview. You can play any song, any album, playlist on the iHeartRadio app for free. So if you haven't already, you can look forward to checking out everything it has to offer. And if you haven't downloaded it yet, go and go do it.
Just also, keep using that hashtag, Tim Hortons TCNT. We are going to pick a winner tomorrow, and we're going to deliver some Tim Hortons coffee and donuts and Tim Mitzed stuff on Thursday.
Justice and Drew here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Sam is back from her horse sabbatical. Nice to have Sam back in her booth.
Nice to be back.
You know, it's funny. We were talking off air, and I don't know if it's like this for everybody, because I can only speak about the three of us. And I'm trying to think of it. No, pretty much just the three of us. It's interesting to me how well we know each other, because you talk about how unpersonal it is when you communicate via texting or say Twitter, right? It's just right. you're not having that one-on-one contact with the individual. What I could continue to find so amusing, though, is that I think 9 times out of 10, based off of lack of responses from comments made, Twitter, texting, I think 9 times out of 10, we do know where the other person is coming from.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we know each other so well. Like, for example, so yesterday, Sam, and it was funny because I was half expecting Sam to chime in at one point. Mm. We had a conversation about going to this festival that Drew had gone right. to on Sunday. And Sam, you had given me a hard time because I jokingly had talked about before you left on your sabbatical last week about going, and you're like, you never go anywhere. If you go to this.
But if you go to this, the one thing that I probably can't go to,
yeah.
I will not be happy. And I didn't have great service all weekend, so I didn't really...
Oh, maybe this is the reason why.
I was very envious of John's desire to not go anywhere yesterday. He made, you know, it was like, John's a wise man. Sometimes
I watched, you know, 2 hours of the Vikings, and then I had the game off to the side when my NASCAR race started yesterday. And Drew, we have all of our, you know, we can see each other's notifications, so it pops up whenever we tweet. So Drew had tweeted out that he was sitting in this traffic in this yeah. long line. There must be a problem. It hasn't moved in like a half hour.
And we were still like a mile away from the event.
And I tweeted back at him and I said, totally. I haven't moved either. Something must be going on. And then I got no response from Drew.
He didn't even get a like.
Nothing. So I asked him a moment ago, I go, I'm assuming that you were annoyed at my funny tweet because I hadn't moved because I've been sitting on my butt all day long, but yeah. you were sitting in traffic, and sure enough, I was right.
Yeah, no, I wasn't annoyed at John. I wasn't annoyed at the tweet, but I was in a bad spot and was not in a position to come back with a witty, snarky reply. Anything I would have replied would have just been mean. Would have just been mean and angry.
Well, I was waiting for Sam.
So I figured no reply was the best reply.
I was waiting for Sam to see it. Because I was really benign with it. Like, I was waiting in traffic, too. So I was waiting for you to chime in going, what, you went? But you were out of cell phone service.
Yeah, I had enough. It was actually frustrating because I had enough service to get the notifications, but not to respond.
Oh!
Which is the worst.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. It's the worst. It's torture.
I don't plan on going to hell, but that would be part of it if I did.
Like, I'd rather have no service than enough to get a notification.
It's just funny how you can, I think 9 times out of 10, those assumptions are right based off of somebody's lack of response. Response or, you know.
No, we engage with each other quite a bit.
True
we spend
story.
A lot of time together.
We do.
Yeah. That's why Sam takes horse sabbaticals.
I need a break from you.
Gotta get away from you guys and be around children.
Like actual children.
Like actual yeah. children.
Not grown not... men who behave like
yeah,
children.
Yeah, right. 30 children dealing with ponies was more peaceful, I think.
Speaking of the people, adults acting like children, out of the Star Tribune, the sound of the national anthem ahead of Sunday's Viking game prompted about 50 people to kneel outside of U.S. Bank Stadium as they protested police violence, drawing stares and booing from passing fans, which apparently is enough to warrant a full Star Tribune article.
I know. Why can't you just ignore them? Just ignore them. This doesn't warrant any coverage. It wasn't that many people. It created no disruption. It created no. It didn't affect anything. Anybody's day at the game or anybody's involved in the game. They didn't block the entrance. Warrants zero coverage. Yet they get a full page article.
They were chanting. They waved cardboard signs. Some messages said, "Stop pretending your racism is patriotism."
What does that have to do with police? No, that has nothing to do with police.
I don't know.
Because this isn't about police, because they're lying about their reasons for doing this. This is all about Trump.
Other messages read were things like, "Got privilege." Well, yeah.
What does that have to do with police?
Nothing to do with police, but you know what? If somebody asks you, you have privilege, yeah. In some way, shape, or form, in some facet of our lives, we have some type of privilege.
Everybody does.
Sam's got a ton.
Sam's got all of it.
She's got all the privilege.
She's a privileged one percenter.
One longtime activist, Mel Reeves,
noticed a lack of argument.
Who helped organize the rally, said, "It's not about the flag. It's about ending police violence. Too many lives have been lost." Yeah, man, you kneel, because that does a lot. You just sit there on your knees and kneel, because that's gonna just accomplish a ton. The raised signs were at times met by boos and middle fingers hoisted into the air by fans walking by.
That's their First Amendment right, just like yours.
Just ignore them.
Just ignore them.
Staring and booing at individuals being stupid doesn't need to warrant an article over. You know, again, it's the media trying to continue to perpetuate this whole kneeling thing. And last time I checked. Although there was a headline a moment ago, I didn't see what it was about, but there was a headline on kneeling earlier this morning. But
yeah, well, they're going to be there every Sunday home game, apparently.
Well, you know what? When that weather cools off, good luck to you. Maybe your knees will be a little more comfortable kneeling in the snow. All right. Also out of the Star Tribune this morning, to Rick Brymacombe, the bike lanes in the Twin Cities are maddening, especially when traffic's heavy, parking spots are limited, and there are few cyclists in sight. The article this morning, "A spread of Twin Cities bike lane excites as well as angers many. Growing network in Minneapolis and St. Paul frustrates." Critics, supporters say cars can't always be king.
Well, why do we build roads? For cars. That's why we build them.
No, we build them to protest on.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
"It's pitting the 2% against the 98%, said Rick. The city governments in Minneapolis and St. Paul are building a network of bike lanes on the streets like never before. Minneapolis has added 75 miles of bike lanes and trails in the past 6 years. St. Paul has added 27 miles since 2015. The growth is cheered as a way to combat climate change and make cycling safer."
Who cheers this? But what idiots are out there cheering this growth?
It's also called a plot to take away parking and pinch lanes available to cars. You know, there's a subsequent article that we won't get into right now, but out of the Star Tribune, these are both in today's paper. Drivers doubt the new lanes are going to help the flow of 694. Commuters say the extra lanes in each direction are stretching about 3 miles, won't go far enough to alleviate the bottlenecks that develop during morning and afternoon rush hours. You know, one of the biggest issues I have here is the perception hurts the efforts. I don't personally want to see tax dollars being spent on expanding the bike lanes here in Minneapolis. I tend to believe that for the time of the year when people can actually go and traverse the streets on their two-wheeled wonders, we do a really good job. But in light of the fact that the roads are in crumbling condition and we haven't done enough to repair them, part of the issue here, though, is that the people that push these lanes, they're so vocal about it. They're so loud and obnoxious about it. It only hurts their cause because so many of them are agenda driven. So many of the individuals that push more of these bike lanes are the ones that want to see people using their cars less. Mm-hmm. They want to see some forced measure to get people out of their automobiles and onto bikes, which doesn't really bode that well in the middle of winter, but they would probably get a lot more done if they just shut up. And weren't so agenda driven and weren't so vocal on it, because it does upset the majority on the roads, you know, who are in cars because they can't bike to work every day. The Minneapolis City Council member, Lisa Bender, also co-founder of the Minneapolis Bike Coalition, said, "Our bicycle network is important in its own right, but it's really part of a bigger look at how we're designing streets for all users and how we're planning to meet our greenhouse gas emission goals and how we're planning to make our streets more livable."
Nobody lives in the streets.
Well, that's not true. A lot of people do. There's a lot of homeless in the area.
Streets are for cars.
Neither Minneapolis...
Let's keep the streets for cars.
Minneapolis. Neither Minneapolis or St. Paul tracks the usage of specific bike lanes. Of course they don't.
Because that would then they wouldn't be able to justify spending the millions and millions of tax dollars that they currently spend on them.
The census data shows that bicycle commuting in Minneapolis rose from a little more than 3% to 5% in 2011 and 2015.
5 whole percent?
The bicycling community in St. Paul grew from about 1% to 2% during the same period. Is that adjusted for the influx of people that are coming into the region? I don't think it's an increase in usage. I think it's just an increase in bodies. Still, the things that make Minneapolis and other cities bike-friendly are also what create controversy. Bender participated in a group bike ride in her South Minneapolis ward on a recent Saturday afternoon, organized after about a dozen people gathered earlier in the day to protest bike lanes. This is really funny, and then we'll get to your phone calls. What began as a fake event posted on Facebook?
Yeah.
Ordered by the Russians. In which case, I'll completely change my tune. By an online prankster, escalated into a real demonstration drawing protesters fed up about the proliferation of bike lanes.
Yeah, this was a bizarre event that kind of took place. It was started off as a fake, and then it turned into a some Nazis got involved somehow.
Well, they used
everywhere. There's Nazis everywhere.
The group marched down the middle of a bike lane on West 26th Street, carrying signs that read "Stop the Anti-Car Agenda" and "Nazi Lane." Bicyclists swerved to avoid
them. Those were the fake, like the prank protesters.
Those were the prank ones.
I think.
I hope. You shouldn't include Nazi in anything. I know. Just leave the Nazis out of it. 651-989-5855. Let's go and talk with John. Good morning, John. Welcome to Twin Cities News Talk. What are your thoughts?
Hey guys, it's a little lovely down here in Florida. You know, I was in the doctor's office just for one of my final checkups, and there were two of these bicycle magazines, like Cycling and Bicycle or whatever. And I glanced through them waiting, and honest to Pete, it was almost scary. The bikers today, and I've been riding a bicycle and a motorcycle for, you know, most of my adult life, but these people are like a cult. They've got things in there about how, you know, we're superior because we're helping the environment. Half the articles had nothing to do with riding a bicycle. It was all politics.
Yeah, it's all lifestyle.
Yeah.
And
a fast follow-up on the Republicans. I keep being absolutely amazed at how stupid they could get, cutting 401ks and increasing and adding a high-end tax bracket. I'm almost nonplussed at how stupid they are when they could get through a genuine slashing of the top tax rates in business, get it all done, everybody agree, I don't care if it's only by 50 votes, who cares? And then by the time the election rolled around with all of the economic activity that it would cause, all of the arguments about budgets and revenue would be out the window.
Yeah, no, they're doing everything they can to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory with this majority that they have. Back to this article about the bicycles, though, real quick. Earlier, you pointed out the census data.
Yeah.
Okay, about 5% maybe.
Right.
Of commuters.
Right.
Use the bicycles. Minneapolis, their master plan calls for more than $280 million of future bike-related projects. They have a Minneapolis bicycle master plan that identifies more than $280 million. St. Paul's plan calls for more than $100 million. So almost $400 million of your money, of taxpayer money, is going to go to benefit about 5%.
Well, and again,
of the commuting population.
It shows you how short-sighted they are, because they would tell you they want to believe that by spending all of this money and increasing the ability of individuals to ride their bikes around, that percentage would increase. But it ignores the what's really happening when it comes to transportation. It ignores the autonomous vehicles. It ignores people using Uber more often. It ignores all of that, just like the light rail does. No, you're not going to see more people opting to get out of their cars to get on bicycles. You're going to see more people opting to go and get in their autonomous vehicles or use an Uber to get around, not ride bicycles more. And again, we're talking at the moon. It's supposed to snow on Friday. Well, at least it was.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know about you. I tried last year. It's really hard to ride your bike in the snow. It's real cold.
And this is, and again, John mentioned it. It's indicated here in the article. This is not about just making things easier and more safer for those people that do want to use their bikes. This is about pushing people out of their cars.
Yeah.
And you know, they've joined up with other advocacy groups to link bikes and transit. They've talked about working with the city governments to discourage single occupancy vehicles, including by cutting back on parking development, by taking away places to go park. If you're a business owner in Minneapolis and you see this going on and you know 99% of your customers drive there, park, and go to your establishment, and if those parking options go away, they're going to go someplace else, how do you feel about this master bicycling plan? Real quick, Barry, Rochester, good morning.
Well, you know how the politicians aren't getting a word this until it's like 2% to 5% and 1% to 2%? Bicycle use has more than doubled, so we have to spend this money.
Right, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, our efforts to just make them feel good.
Our efforts have almost doubled the use of people that are commuting on the bikes. We're at 5% now. Can we get it up to 8% by spending $300 million more?
Hey Sam, if they made a horse trail from your house in Buffalo to here, would you ride a horse to work?
Probably not. I love my horses, but they're not efficient.
651-989-5855. You can communicate with us too using the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. Got a guest coming up, Representative Jason Lewis.
Yeah, we're going to talk to him about a topic that's come up a number of times, the efforts to encourage alternatives to traditional 4 years degree, more technical educations. Also get his thoughts on the Republicans' efforts to reform the tax code.
Justice.
Talk AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Justice and Drew. Sam is back for your Monday morning. Glad that you are with us this morning.
Joining us now, Representative Jason Lewis. Good morning, sir. Been far too long since we've had the chance to catch up with you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Gentlemen, thanks. You got a tough crowd there this morning. I haven't even said anything and you disconnected.
That was my fault, Barb.
Sam was off for a few days and forgot how the phone works.
Apparently. I accidentally hung up on
it. At least wait until I say something. You know, someone doesn't like.
She's already had enough.
Yeah.
So we started reaching out to you last week. I know you were indisposed last week, but there was a story in the Star Tribune about how you are involved in some efforts to increase access and encourage more technical education, more traditional or alternatives to traditional 4-year degrees, vocational schools, apprenticeships, things like that. And the article was sort of detailing how difficult it's been for those efforts to get traction in Congress. Can you talk a little bit about what you were advocating for and why you think there is that difficulty? Yeah. and why it is difficult to get momentum behind it.
Headway with the Perkins bill, the reauthorization for some career and technical education is what the policy wonks call it. You and I used to call it the mechanical trades, shop classes, welders, pipe fitters, you name it.
Right.
And if you take a look at the educational landscape, we sort of have a one-size-fits-all plan. Everyone's got to spend $100,000 on a 4-year liberal arts degree in anthropology. And we see these people all the time. They're usually waiting on tables after they're trying to pay off their debt, and they can't service the debt. So whatever happened to this other route? And this has been a pet peeve of mine for quite some time, and it's very much designed around the special interests involved here, the people that are trying to recruit everyone to go to a 4-year liberal arts school when they shouldn't be. So I offered a dual enrollment amendment to the Perkins bill that says if someone wants to go to a trade school, they want to go to a community college, get an AA degree in you know, nursing or welding or what have you, then they can do part of that in high school to allay the cost, And by the way, the cost to get one of these mechanical trade degrees is minimal compared to a four-year liberal arts degree at even a publicly funded university. More than that, fellas, if I talk to every single employer in the second district, to a person, they say, I can't find skilled workforce.
Right.
I can't find people that can operate a computerized lathe. I can't find people that can go to a construction site and work. Those are the jobs that that we have a shortage in. And so it has been an effort of mine for quite some time, long before I got in Congress, to point out that not everyone has to go and get a four-year degree at a very expensive university. Now, the status quo, the university types don't like this.
Yeah.
But we've got to change this because we've got a $1 trillion student loan a debt that can't be serviced right now by people with these degrees that aren't what the market is calling for. So I have been very active on that, and we have been pushing that, and we have had some success. And I do think it's a bipartisan movement. I think there are a number of Democrats that agree with me on the Education and Workforce Committee.
Is laying out the pathways perhaps the best way to break, I don't want to say stereotype, but there is a mentality that as kids move through high school, they need to go to a four-year college, and we've moved away from promotion of these other alternatives. Do you think that this is the fastest way to sort of change that by putting better pathways in front of these students?
All we're doing is giving kids options. I mean, you and I remember in the old days in high school when you had shop classes, and you always had a few kids that perhaps weren't doing as well as they should academically, but they get their head under the hood of a car and a light bulb goes off.
Yep.
Man, I found my calling. This is what I'm going to do. And all of a sudden they take off. And those are the people that are fixing your car.
Right.
They aren't the people that have degrees in political science. So that's, we're trying to give them options. Look, it's a brave new world. If everybody thinks you need a degree, you might ask the late Steve Jobs or Bill Gates, both of whom don't have a college degree.
Right, exactly.
We live in an era where people are doing things, and they need to be able to have these trade skills. And so I have been very outspoken on that in Congress, you bet.
How loud and powerful would you say that the lobbying efforts from the higher education group against these types of efforts is? Because that's not a group that you hear often about when it comes to the dreaded special interests in Washington.
Yeah, well, I can tell you, I had another amendment that would have increased the funding for career technical education help, but not to incur more debt or spending. We would have flatlined the funding for four-year liberal arts schools, by the way, which had gone up amazing. I mean, they were at their all-time record high. And CTE funding was about 60% below what it was 10 years ago. So I was going to take from the one group and give to the other group so as to be fiscally responsible, but also sort of steer students into an option that might fit them best. Well, the lobbying effort was so intense, they were handing out letters against my amendment on the floor of the House.
Is it tied in, too, with the sort of narrative that's been going around for the past few years against these private colleges? You know, we've seen story after story about these crackdowns and how they're being prosecuted for fraud, and attorney generals around the country are going after them. And it feels to me like it's all kind of the efforts are somewhat coalesced there in demonizing these private colleges, these private universities. Not to say that there aren't some bad actors out there. There always are and there always will be. But there's been a real concerted effort to demonize the entire industry.
Well, it's a little bit apples and oranges. In the for-profit college world, you do have a higher dropout rate. However, if you take a look at the total dollar figure of the student loan debt crisis we're in, the vast majority comes from four-year traditional liberal arts colleges, private and public. So one rate is a bit higher, but the bulk of the money that's being borrowed is coming from the status quo. But I'm not talking about sending kids to a four-year private for-profit school necessarily. I'm talking about going to Dakota County Technical School. I'm talking about going to a trade school for a year.
Yeah.
I know of employers that will tell some of these kids, if you go and get this particular mechanical trade degree, we will give you a job when you are done and with full health care benefits. They're looking for people. So we're doing our kids a great disservice by not giving them this option.
And I want to encourage everybody to go back and listen to the podcast in the 7 o'clock hour of Thursday show last week. We discussed this at length with Intellectual Takeout's Devin Foley. Had a really, really good discussion on this, Representative Jason Lewis. Let's switch gears. I really want a tax break. a tax cut? Am I going to get? Yeah. Am I going to get it?
I think so. I think I feel pretty good about it. We'll vote on the Senate budget this week, and really, those are formalities to get reconciliation directives to the respective committees, the Senate Finance Committee and the House Ways and Means Committee, to start drafting the tax reform bill. So once the Senate budget, you have to have pass a budget resolution in both houses. Once it's done, then those reconciliation directives that are in the resolution, I hate to get too much in the weeds here, but basically they direct the respective tax writing committees to start the process, and here's what we want. And then that process will take a couple of weeks at House Ways and Means and the Senate Finance, and then we'll have a bill. And then the fund starts, and hopefully we'll get it voted on before Thanksgiving, get it done before Christmas. The bottom line is we are not growing at rates that we have historically. In the Obama era, we never hit 3% growth when the post-World War II average was 3.3%. 1 percentage point growth in GDP over 10 years will give us about $2.5 trillion more in revenue. So the only way to get out from under this debt crisis is to get growth going again. And you don't get growth going again by telling a small mom and pop business that if you want to go out and start a venture and you are successful, the government will take 55 to 60% of your profits. That is not exactly an inducement to take a risk with your money. So you do that by taking that rate, that pass-through rate. I'm not talking about the C-Corp rate, and we have some reforms there, too. But I'm talking about sole proprietorships, subchapter S corporations, partnerships. You take that rate from 39.6 at the federal level to 25. Because here's what the left, the fatal conceit of the left is. They assume production, and they assume people will be successful and will invest. And, of course, none of that is true. When people invest, more are unsuccessful, frankly. So the question for the average investor is, well, I could take a risk, mortgage my house for the second time, lose everything I've saved, or I could take a risk, and if it does work, why they take 60% of what I earn if I have a good year? You've got to start rewarding work, saving, and investment, and that's what we're doing.
This is somewhat disconnected. It falls in line with what we're talking about, but a little bit disconnected from what you were just saying. I'm curious, and I think we had a caller that was last time we were on. We're going to hear a lot of that term middle class used over the course of the next few weeks, you know, and month as you guys work on this. It's such a moving target. Where do you land? Like, where do you mentally land if you say middle class? And, you know, obviously, relation to tax cuts?
Well, I don't, you know, that's a great question. You can make the argument that the tax reduction in the bills that are currently being drafted is much greater for the middle and lower brackets. I mean, for instance, we take the bottom rate and eliminate it. The 10% rate is gone. That's a massive tax cut at the bottom. The 15% rate goes to 12. The top rate only goes from 39.6 to 35. So the percentage point rates are much greater at the middle and bottom end. But the point is, I don't want to get into this class warfare argument.
Right.
What I want is a rising tide of growth where everybody makes more money. So if the lower and middle classes are doing better and making more money, who cares what Steve Jobs and Bill Gates are doing?
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. That frustrates me to no end when these conversations about tax reform proposals is the first question some people seem to have is, well, who does it benefit? Who cares who it benefits? It's ultimately going to benefit everybody.
Well, the question is, should people keep more of the money they earn?
Right. Yeah.
Regardless of what bracket or what quintile they find themselves in, whose money is it? And the left thinks it's their money, and they think it's this big collective, and it's not. You know, you also have to understand too that if someone at the top gets more money, they don't put it in a mattress.
Right.
They invest the money to buy the truck for the truck driver, the jackhammer for that tradesman, and then those people become more productive, allowing them to earn more money.
Oh,
it,
that's
it is
just
not
this,
a zero-sum game.
That's that discredited trickle-down economics. Come on. We all know that's a right-wing myth.
We used to call it capital investment.
Right, exactly.
before they labeled
it. But we all know those one percenters are just throwing all that cash into their jacuzzi and, you know.
Swimming around.
That is a great point, guys. When they say that, you might want to ask them, okay, what are they just burning the money? What are they doing with the money? Mm-hmm. It has to go someplace.
Right.
And whether they, you know, the Keynesians will love the idea if they say they're going to spend it. Why, that's all what Democrats call the stimulus plan. That's not why I think taxes ought to be cut. I think they ought to be cut because they invest it. And when they invest it, the money's loaned out for productivity increases.
Yep.
And the only way people who are laborers can make more money is if they increase their productivity. Otherwise, it does become a zero-sum game. Otherwise, the business owner says, well, I'm not going to give you more money because it comes out of my pocket. But if they're more productive, they sell more, they produce more, then the owner says, you can have more money, and I can make more money.
Representative Lewis, we've just got a couple minutes left. You got time to take a quick call with us?
Sure.
Brad from Stillwater, go ahead.
Hi, Brad.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good.
Doing well, thanks.
So I just I want to thank you for bringing up some of the stuff on technical trades. I currently work in the technical trades for a medical device company here in the Twin Cities.
Yep.
Won't mention the name because I'm not a representative of them. But we're constantly looking for good technical people to work in the trade and always short on people to try and get that to happen properly.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? The opportunities there.
Yeah, we will continue to promote those efforts on this show because John and I both agree it's something that is very important. It needs a lot more focus and a lot more promotion, a lot more attention. Representative Lewis, thanks for your time this morning. Always a pleasure.
Hey, gang, always a pleasure.
All right. Yeah, great talking with you, man.
Take care.
Now, we've got a lot going on with the show. Later on today, if you go to TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and the Justice and Drew page, you'll be able to get a rundown of everything that we have going on. But the we're going to put your chance to win a grand in your hand all week long.
7 o'clock and 8 o'clock every morning, we'll be giving out a keyword that you can text, enter a drawing for $1,000.
We have tickets all week for the Dead End Hayride VIP.
VIP tickets.
That's right.
Yeah, we'll be there Friday night. If you win, you're welcome to join us. We can hopefully all ride together.
Also, coming up on Thursday, we will deliver, and I believe Sam will actually be coming with us this time.
I will be.
We'll be delivering Tim Hortons to an office. All you need to do is use that hashtag Tim Hortons TCNT on Twitter. Tell us where you work and why you want Tim Hortons, and maybe you have a chance to meet us and get Timbits and tasty coffee.
We will do a drawing tomorrow after the show of everybody that's used that Tim Hortons TCNT hashtag over the course of the last week, and somebody will be notified that they've been chosen, and we will deliver you some Tim Hortons on Thursday. We'll do this again next week, too. So keep using that hashtag, keep entering, and encourage your office mates and friends to join in as well.
We didn't get a chance to get to it on today's show. We will tomorrow. But who's who in Minneapolis's most politically diverse city council race?
Politically diverse.
That's fun. That is funny.
The MinnPost legitimately said.
Politically diverse.
Ever.
No.
Ever.
No.
Yeah.
In their world, it is.
There's no conservative.
Though. In their world, there isn't. They don't exist in their minds. Have a great night.
I don't want nobody. Open up the door.
It's reported, so I put it in the book. It's reported that George W. Bush, as it ends, says that was some weird shit.
Will you shut up?
I'm Chris Addison here.